Session number 14982, Mr. J. Brown, Reel 23.
Mr. Brown, Reel 23. Will you go on with your escape, Mr. Brown?
And the idea was, if we jump a train, get off in Austria, anywhere in Austria, we'd live off the land. Sounds a bit fantastic. And this was January, and the idea would make our way to Yugoslavia, which wasn't too far. And when if you got to Yugoslavia, there was a good chance you'd get picked up there, because they were totally anti-German-like, you know. But anyway, cut the long story short, must have been prisoner of war fever. Getting out wasn't too difficult, as I went through before. We got into the wood, that was no problem. We got out, and anyway, the party had stopped, they're in, but they stopped the cart, as near the wood, you know, this, that and the other. They're talking to the guards, and one thing or another, you know, off they're gone. It's not about that at all. But anyway, there was only four guards out this day, which was the usual normal, like there was four guards, and we got into the wood, went straight through the wood, we went to the railway. It was name Anna. While the quarters of crow flies. Went through, and we crossed the railway, and went round in half circle, come out north of Mulberg. We thought it was better get the train there. We thought maybe trains would slow up coming into Mulberg if there was able to stop there for you, see. So, we hit the railway line above Mulberg, and we're starting, it was getting a bit weighty there, and the weather was bad, it was dusking in, and one thing another. Walk up the line, starting to feel miserable already, like, you know. And we found what appeared to be a transformer house by the railway side for electric people, like. And there was a door on, it wasn't locked, so we spent the night in there. It was bloody miserable. But no means of there was a tap in our running water, but that was it. By no means of heating out, you know, and this, that and the other. And you find your morale starting to drop a little bit. So anyway, we had to stop there. So next morning we decided to start to snow. That helped, lovely, that was bloody great snowing. So there was one or two odd trains went through, well they were down 60, 80 mile an hour. There was no chance, you know what I mean, like, but we kept going up the railway line. And I think in both our minds, we're thinking, I wish the hell we'd back in that Stellag, you know, and wait for the summer, and wait for the days. But anyway, we were there, we couldn't have to make the most of it. So we decided to follow the line till we hit a village, and then make our plans then. I think the plan for the main to walk and give ourselves up. But anyway, kind of went up the line, and we saw a small camp on the other side. There was no barbed wire out, but it was a series of huts, you know. Not many spread out. So we'll have a look at that, see what's happened. Oh, we went. I've got near these huts and we saw three women. They were coming out of one hut. I don't know what else about them. Bloody snow, they've come down that big. So the saw us coming, like, and we went up, and there were Polish lasses, the prisoners of war. But I mean, there was nowhere for them to run, like, run back to Poland. They were just in as much trouble as they were, you know. And they were. There was a couple of the language difficulty was terrible. There was some that could babble a few words of English and that, but sign language and that. But as far as I could understand, it was some kind of sugar beet place. What you doing sugar beet? Well, sugar beet in the middle of British January. I don't know, like, but that's where they were. And we explained, well, England, Gefangenes, you know, and then, you know, they twigged on quick, like. And they were giving us a hush-hush with sign language and all that. And anyway, they took us to a little hut. It was farther down. It was isolated. And all was inside was bloody junk, you know, a couple of old ladders and this, that, and the other. And I don't think any of the painters, nobody owned us. So they stuck us in there, and there's one of them told them stop there. One of them went and she brought some hot soap back. Looked like potato and turnip, you know, but we're bloody thankful for it, you know. And we didn't need our water bottles full. We pulled them in our transformer house. And anyway, up they went. They told us to stay there in sign language till it stopped snowing. Well, I didn't think we were going to stop in bloody January. I didn't anyway. And anyway, next morning, we stopped there all night. Well, they brought us, there's one who come back, brought us a little old dirty blanket each. It's the best dad power buggers, you know. And that helped a bit, like. And next morning, they come down again. We've got some more bloody potato and, you know, this, that and the other. And we've given it a lot of thought then, you know. So we decided, unanimously, like, to get out of there. Keep going up the line, we'll hit some place, village, town or whatever, you know, and give ourselves up. But we couldn't do it in that camp, because them Polish girls would probably get into trouble, you know, for the Norton, who had been there maybe overnight and such as that. So off we went. I don't know how to, you didn't count the reason. Couple of miles maybe up there. There was a village there, and I think, if I remember correctly, they call it Artsburg. So we got off the railway, and there was a road come round, run by the railway, into the village, onto the road, and we tramped in there. I met three or four people and tried to explain to them that. The buggers just walked on, ignored us. I don't know if it was weather or what. So went back, and there was a little railway, just a tiny little railway station there, went in there. There's two Irish blokes that there. Well, they had twigged on straight away, like, and shaking hands, well, this is good, like. They give us a drink of that's tray, nice and warm, you know. Then one of them buggered off, and he brought what a pint of it, the village policeman back. Well, he was a right blustery, overweight, bad-tempered, hated the English, obviously, you know. And he had a pretty big old-fashioned helmet on with a brass trip over the top. I don't know whether that was what the local police were. That must have been. And he was... He wasn't punching us, but he shoved us about and all this, that and the other. And he was getting really naughty. We couldn't hang out, like, we were just dodging, you know. Couldn't hit him back, we would have been in trouble. And then they stuck us in what appeared to be the waiting room. And we were there maybe 4, 5, 6 hours. There must have been on the phone. There was a truck come, four gentlemen from the Wehrmacht down, like. Weren't too suited, like. Full of really bad damage onto the truck. You know. And took us back. And the same old route down, we're in the German headquarters all night. It was a little cell, but it wasn't particularly, it was clean and all that. There was no bar, it was a pretty big thick oak, looked like an oak door, you know. And they gave us our drink and left us in there all night. Then we got tried next morning, and the same old route down. German commandant, a really interpreter, why did you go? And where were you going? Well, we wanted to go home. You know, I was sick of this, like. They'd had all that before, you know. Where did you get the food? So we didn't have any. Which was pretty right, like. We weren't out on us. And anyway, we got off for 14 days. But it was an out month. It was just being that one compound into another. Then we went back to Bay North compound.
Was yours one of the casual escapes? It wasn't one of the organised escapes?
No, it was just... Not most, but a hell of a lot was done. Casuals, man. It was Stalag Fever, I think, you know. And you shall get it out of your system, mind. All the proper ones were you had to do it through snowball. You know, that had to be real common sense. You had to have an objective. You had to know where you were going and who you hoped to meet and all that, like. Which I suppose is common sense, like. But how many did it that way? You had a few lectures about blokes. Whether anybody ever made it, I didn't know. They didn't tell you that. But... like these two RAF blokes, you know, that there was one or two come round give lectures on the mistakes that made, like, you know. And pretty interesting, mate. But it made you realise just how hopeless it was, because a big country, Germany, you know. And even getting to Holland, German-occupied, French. And I say 75 of the French was pro-bloody German at that time. But I suppose bricks were not.
How did you get on with the German guards? Did you get on all right with the German guards?
Well, you didn't see much of them. In the Stalag, you mean? Well, being in the Stalag, you see, the only ones you saw was on the morning when you're on roll call. The rest of them was in the boxes right round, you see. You get a staff, some of the staff come in now and again for bits of odd things, and you'd have couple of sentries just patrolling during the day, not all the time, like, you know. But you had that big perimeter wire right round, well guarded, this, that and the other. But I mean, say, if you want a working party, a lot of lads on a working party learn to speak German to a great degree. Because we're mixing where there's guards with them. If they're working in quarries or little factories or whatever the job was, on farms, there's somebody there and you could pick German up. We weren't in that position, you know. And
if you were an NCO and you were allotted not to work?
The Geneva Conventions, full corporals and above, needn't work unless you volunteered. Well, there was some volunteered, but no. And
you mentioned bartering. How did things move around in the camp? Were you bartering for things that you didn't, that you wanted, with things you didn't want?
Well, the thing was, if and when you were getting the Red Cross parcels, you got cigarettes in them, you say. Right, the Germans, they wouldn't give anything, but there was a lot of bartering went up. Say, for you'd get a loaf of bread for 20 cigarettes, they're black bread, you say. That simply meant you died. And if you're a non-smoker, like, you'd know that sort of thing, you know. And there's quite a bit of bartering went off that way. But if they got caught, they got really punished, you know. Say, but those odd ones were coming to the camp and do that sort of thing, like. But by and large, it wasn't like a big thing, you know. You couldn't just say, I have 20 cigarettes, I'll go and buy a loaf. You couldn't do that. You had to find somebody that was in cahoots with them, like, and, you know.
What about stealing? Were any men stealing from their comrades?
Well, that was probably the biggest crime. Say, some blokes, they'll get the Red Cross parcel, let everything go down straight away, get rid of the bugger, you know. But the blokes were careful, they would diet themselves and keep this. And the big thing was, you always got to buy the chocolate like that. And some blokes would keep that chocolate, you know, for a rainy day, you say. I wasn't one of them, like, but I would never steal off anybody else. So we used common sense, made it last out till the next parcel was in sight. But there was one bloke in our hut. He was, he's out the Welsh Guards and all. He'd, somebody bunking near him had had a few bars of chocolate and he knocked them off. And what happens then, they set a vault in three or four and give him a good beating up. Oh, I'd knock them all over the bloody place. Terrible.
So you meted out your own punishments if you caught
anyone? Oh, you did, aye. They meted out. It was rough enough, aye. I suppose that to be in that. But if you allowed the bloke just to tuck, it was two or three times it happened, like. And then when, I was a bit early yet, like, before that, did our 14 days back into Bay North compound, old Moody's gang. By that time, this was still January, like, about the end of January. It was the beginning when we went out, a couple of days, 3 days, and did our 14 days, probably the end of January. And Moody was working his ticket. He'd been to see the camp commandant. He demanded knives, forks, spoons, new blankets, better rations, this, that and the other. Well, the commandant tried to explain to him, like, a Germany's at war, he couldn't give his own man that, like. Say, never mind prisoner of war. So Moody, that turned out to hell with that, decided on strike action. Nobody turned out for roll call in the morning. Ridiculous, you know. And total disobedience to the Germans in regards to any bloody thing. So this upset the Germans, naturally, like. So there was some shouting for a few days, shouting, manhandling, butt strokes, this, that and the other. But no, that was it. You can stick your roll call on a monkey sticks at nuts. It's either disobey Moody or disobey them. It's better done what Moody said. So anyway, this particular morning, down the corner, there were bloody 100 or more, armed to the bloody teeth. The infantry blokes, you know, had been brought them from somewhere. Lock, stock and barrel, we herded out the main gate. Our compound, everybody else, bloody lined up, butts and this and this, shouting and bawling. Bloody German officer, and they were still working the tickets, you know. Well, yeah, it was incredible. And our lot, like. And he couldn't speak English, this officer, shouting. He meant to say, you've got minds like little children, you know. And mines of kinder, mines of kindry shouting and, and bloody blocks for the butts. And anyway, they herded us up. We didn't know what was going to happen, you know. But I think then they knew the war was lost, like, you know. It was, any comments, anybody with any sense in Germany knew it was a matter of time. This was January 45. So they herded us away and we started to march. Oh, we must have marched about 15 bloody miles. But anyway, we just got on to pass the word back. They said if this is going to be a, what we'd read about, a shouting match in the middle of the bloody wood, there was over 1,700 of us from Gorner. It sounds silly, but that was what the word passed down. Down the charge of the Light Brigade, regardless of casualties, overpower the buggers, and that was every man for himself, what happened after that. But it wasn't that like. Marches. Went over the Elbe now, and little bridge, the bridge over the Elbe, big wide river, went away down. Oh, Christ, must have been out again about 14, 15 miles. Went through a straggly little dirty village, and the hell of a bloody area, low, like a swampy area. Went through here, a bloody camp, just a little camp with four huts in. It was about that way, not deep in mud, you know.
About a foot deep.
And that on Jakobstal, Jewstown, to be in a Jewish camp, you know. So what his idea was, for Moody working his ticket to punish us, not that he didn't know. But we got in there, divided up in these four huts, you know. Found it not in the hut, but there was no bunks. There was two wooden shelves right round, like that. He slept like sardines round the bloody shelves. There's one little 40-watt bulb, say. There's one tap for every bugger in each hut to get washed out of, and such as that. There was no heating whatsoever. This was in January, you know. So, the very next day, I said, oh, bloody carry on here. There was just a little there was just one way around, you know. But the very next day, the Swiss Red Cross bloke was on the job. Snowball must there was a grapevine. He was in. Well, for a couple of weeks, we'd had no Red Cross parcels in the Stalag, you know. So within 3 days, we got Red Cross parcels, this, that, and the other. And the Swiss Red Cross bloke come back about after 3 or 4 days just to check. Say, so whether he's going to punish or not, I don't know. But a horrible bloody little place. But as soon as we got the Red Cross pass, we were cock a hoop like. And there was this camp, on a little camp on its own, right out in the woods. There was a gap of about 50 yards, and there was another wire, and there was a camp up on the hill, and it was a TB camp for Russians. And he was working on food workers, men and women, you know. He was working on practically the minimum food of developing TB. And they were going there to die, you know. Right, straight through there without any, there was no wall of ash and, or anything around it, was a bloody big lime pit. And every morning we used to watch them coming down, sometimes one, sometimes two, saying as far as about 7 or 8. The others used to carry them down, used to naked, they stripped all the clothes off because they wanted the clothes themselves for a bit of heat, you know. And plop, plop, in that bloody lime pit. Now they knew we were in there, in desperation, on odd occasions, you get one or two of them would break through, you know. Break their way, they'd get through at ours, or begging, you know. Well, if they got through, we would feed them. But there was no way he could hide them, see? And in between, he had another game. Right at the end of it, he had the usual boxes right round with the Germans' machine guns and all that. Right at the end of each end of this gap, he was playing a game. He had a box there. And then maybe about 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, he'd start, about every quarter hour, with the lights would flash on, you know. And boom, his machine gun on both sides. You got to carry two of them. I like that. Full book was trying to get over, get a feed. And it was cold, you know, but it was bitterly cold. He used to lay the bodies there for 2 or 3 days, and then make other Russians come down, tackle the throne, drop them into that lime pit. An awful bloody people, the Germans.
Make you feel angry, did it?
Oh, Christ, we didn't like them to begin with. But think of blaming Hitler. I mean, Hitler was one man, but he couldn't do all that himself, could he? Now it would go on to these fellas. This was the Germans down on the bottom, you see. Now, there was one little road went through at the bottom there, just a little strip, and there was a well-heated cabin there, and the camp committee's bloke getting on. He wasn't as fat as that, and he had the jack boats of shine and this, that, and he was so thin and that, the lads used to call him Harry Ragg after Jackie, you know. This bloody Harry Ragg, he used to call him all the names. He used to just grinning out the window. Like, two or three occasions, they would roll call in the morning. You'd search, there was nowhere to hide, really. You'd search the camp right through. You get a couple of these poor buggers that got through. They're already down with TB. And this is, true as I'm sitting there, this is the Germans. He was in his nice warm cabin looking out the window, sucking his ass out the coffee, you know. Our lads was outside, the language, they called them everything. He just grinned, made no difference. Then he took poor bloody Russians, he'd stripped them to the waist. I mean, they had only a little bit of shirt and that on, bloody icy wind. He would, one would have to put his hands round the back of the telegraph pole and the jury would tie them, and the jury post. And he had to, if he didn't, he would get wrong, you see. And the other one would nail down in the frost. And if there's much as moved, that he had to butt stroke them. If he didn't, he got wrong. That, I mean, I don't know, in the British Army, I think, you'd have told the bloke, you do what you have and well like, you know. But that sort of thing. And then poor fellas, they would get them away, but they would be dead within hours, man. That sort of thing, aye. Anyway, being the British, we're getting the Red, we've got a Red Cross parcel every week with our 7 bloody weeks. Because we're living better, except for the accommodation, we're living better than we did in the Stalag. So, in our hut, we formed our own concert party. You know, you do that. You get singers and comedians, you get their smokers and tell a tale and all this sort of thing, you know. So, we've done quite well. Anyway, we got word within 4 days we're going back to the Stalag. See, well, the German staff was trying to be nice then, you know, see. So they'd heard about our concert parties, and they decided to visit. We only had a 40-watt bulb, you know. So anyway, they got, there was four of them, and including Addy Rag, and would have killed him, would have come back on us. But anyway, four German staff had to bring seats up for them. They were at the front, a pretty long hut, you know, 140-watt bulb, unbelievable. Makeshift stage up there. Then there's a little Irish lad, he noted for singers, like, he could sing a couple of songs, he was all right, one thing or another. Well, we had a resident comedian, he'd been a comedian in peacetime, Mickey Reid, they called him. He could be dirty, straight, he could be that, he was good, you know. So, anyway, it was Mickey Reid's turn, oh, there's a breath of sush, on he come on. He was dressed as Hitler, you know, the Tash, four locked down here, just a, oh, there's this, that, the other, you know. These Germans were looking. And then we knew what it was, but we knew it was Mick, otherwise you couldn't recognise them. So he started a few monologues, praising the Germans. Oh, these fellas were, how good Germany was, how great they were, and all this, that, and the other. It went on. How the hell he made it up, I don't know. Then at the finish, the climax, when we didn't know what was coming, he was standing in, he said, when the German eagle spreads its wings, and these fellas, when the German eagle spreads its wings, when the German eagle spreads its wings, may it split its fucking arsehole. And the light went down. Well, if you don't say that, we're on roll call 5 hours next year, till we tell the whole world, no, I don't know what we well, it was great. We didn't know it was coming, you know, we were rolling around the night, so it was great. And when they finally got the light on, these Germans were ranting and raving, and bloody sent me from round the compound. They might as well have laughed, you know. I think our officers have been, they would have laughed, lad, said, well, that was good. You know, if they'd been calling Churchill or something like that. Hey, it was great the way he did it. Of course, nobody knew, we knew it was Mickey, but that sort of thing, man. They called our own race of people, but you can pick on them, but when the chips was down, like, I didn't know I've got something.
Is humour important?
Oh, it's got to be, isn't it? In all walks of life, even now, like, isn't it? Humour's important, like. It's got, it's very important. It's a tonic, isn't it? A doctor can't give you humour, you know, can he? See? Hey.
So you're in this camp and you moved back to the main camp?
Yes, we moved back.
What date would this be? Around about what time?
Well, we're there 7 weeks. Went down to January, February, maybe middle of March, I mean, you didn't put your dates down, you know.
Was this in 1944 or 45?
45.
Towards the end
45.
Of war.
45. And anyway, we got back to Stalag, and there was, we'd known it. I mean, we're only 15 bloody miles away. There was all kinds of air activity, you know. And there's quite a few Spitfires coming over, you know. And now the Russians had been about 40 mile away, at a place called Cottbus, we understood, like, and they'd been fighting like hell to get over this river at Cottbus, you know, been fighting there for weeks, they finally made it. But in the meantime, we got back, and they say there's all kinds of air activity, and the bloody big raids coming over to the Czech or the back border. He was getting oil from, extracting oil from coal, you know, and they were bombing them, and the RAF was down the night bombing, where I think they were carrying three times the load the Yanks did. The Yanks were coming over in daylight, but bad, they were getting some wallop in daylight, you know, they're loving some planes. But mind, there's some jerrys coming down at all. But on the night, we used to watch for them. Not long before dark, the old pathfinders would go over, you know. What were they, not typhoons? What was the other plane? But no arms on whatsoever, just for speed. And they were dropping leaflets of the bombing area, you know. They would drop leaflets, some would drop leaflets, telling the different languages, telling people to get out of the area. There was going to be a big bombing raid. Foreigners, ignore the Germans, get out of the area. They were going to be on top of us. And then the others would come in and would, miles from us, mind, you know, but you could see it, they would lay these flaming onions right round the target area for miles and miles, and there'd be one gap, and all the bombers had to do was hit that gap, get in there and drop the bombs in that area. Of course, there were German night fighters and the bloody anti-aircraft, and there were still planes coming down. But that sort of thing happened, like, and this went on. It was, there was Spitfires coming over, they were shooting anything up that moved, you know. Okay? And it was getting pitiful from the Germans' point of view, like. And there was even where this railway line that we'd come up from Austria, and where we'd crossed when we made that little break, the neatest part of the camp was maybe just about half a mile or something down that way. Of course, the station was around there. It was a bloody 4 mile walk from the station, but the line was actually just down there. And he'd had a training there, must have had a certain amount of ammunition, and when the Spitfires come over, told him this day. And anyway, I think anywhere there was a bunch of trees, and the line went through to say there's somebody hidden in there, the bloody shot had opened, that bloody thing was going up. We knew then it was a matter of time for the war. Right.
This must have improved your own morale.
You were getting a bit cocky then. But Red Cross parcel had stopped completely. The German railway system was shattered. And the Germans were getting a few, three or four taties here. Nothing else, you know. Need bread, need out. If it went on too long, those blokes hadn't been to the toilet for two or three weeks. Then I'm seeing Major White. He said, well, you're eating nothing, you can't. He said, we're all the same, you know. And anyway, this particular morning, these toilets out in the middle of the compound, it must have been 6 o'clock in the bloody morning. We, two or three of us went up there, just went to run off and just chatting up, and you're feeling bloody weak, like, for the want of food, like, and all that, but hoping for the best, wondering what tomorrow was going to bring. And away in the distance, we're looking out the window, and away in the distance, they say these cavalry blokes, horsemen coming out, Russians coming out the wood about a mile and a half away. You could just see the figures coming out. Not long after that, you could see tanks, artillery, and all them teaming out the bloody wood. They were making to the Elbe, you know. And anyway, they must have done this liberation all the way down, like from East Prussia right down. No doubt they had done. They'd seen the Sather Stalag. It was a funny thing, this. As badly as the Russians had been treated, and this, that, and the other, and still that Russian compound there, they run the bloody hammer and sickle up. They did, lad. They must have had a great finding now. Up went the bloody hammer and sickle. That didn't matter to us. And anyway, after a while, there was half a dozen of these cavalry blokes came up to the camp, and contacted the camp leader, Snowball and Major White, like, and explained to them. They said, why, the villages and the farms are practically deserted except for old people. So you've starved long enough, get out and help yourselves. But keep out the woods, there's still German bands, and if you get shut up, it's your own fault. But if you want food, get out and get it. That's what a lot did, you know. Right, It was ridiculous. They didn't even get out the main gate. They just pulled the bloody wires down each compound and went down. They were bringing pigs, hens, everything back to the camp. They were breaking bunks up, huts, anything, back in bonfires and cooking. There was a kind of few died, you know. Blokes had been prisoners a long time. Why, none of us had what you call, you know, you had to be very careful. There were bloody pig grease and such as that. They were roasting potatoes and stuffing them down. Well, it was obvious, like, there's quite a few took ill and died, like.